You're listening to Home Business Profits with Ray Higdon, where Ray shares tips and strategies for how to become a top earner in your company. Let's get into the episode.
Hey, what is up? What's happening? I am super excited for another powerhouse interview with one of my favorite people on planet Earth, someone that I have learned so much from, super, super smart, just a legend in the industry. And so let's welcome her big time. But first, this topic is, not only is it a needed topic of how to recruit and work with big leaders, but it's also being taught by someone who's an absolute expert at this. And so without further ado, I'm going to bring her out here. Again, someone that I've gotten a lot of mentorship over. I've got a lot of mentorship from over the years. She has helped me in so many different ways, inspired me in so many different ways, just a total rock star. You're going to love her, and I'd be shocked if you don't know her already. And if you do know her, then you love her already. But please help me welcome Rockstar. She's built teams of over a million people in her organization. She's absolutely amazing. Lisa Grossman. Lisa Grossman, how are you?
I'm having an awesome morning here, Ray. How are you?
I'm doing well. First, did my team add enough N's to your name?
I think it was correct this time. You know, I've gotten to the point that I don't even look anymore, especially with family, because, you know, but yeah.
That's great. I know that that's a rare feat, and I'm like, we got to get it right this time. And so, Lisa, you have led humongous organizations. You've been in the industry for quite a few years. I've led huge. 33 years. That's amazing. That's incredible. And so first, I always like people to hear this story. You've been a leader, generated millions and millions and millions of dollars. How did you get introduced to network marketing? I know I ask you this every time, but
it's okay because it was a very, I don't know that today this would be a textbook, but 33 years ago it was. I got the call from somebody that I loved, who was, you know, basically ranting about she was gonna get rich and she found it and it was this. I mean, she didn't, it was like my mom's best friend, so in hand, she didn't predict me sound rational, but she asked if she could come over and show me something, and I said sure. She came over and she proceeded to what looked like to me take apart my sink, and you know, and she was hooking up this water filter, and all I could think was, you're so excited because what, you're gonna be a plumber, you know, what are you doing? And she went on to tell me about this product and asked me if I would use it for a week. And kind of a puppy dog approach, we call it, which I love. If you've got a good product, don't ever underestimate the letting the product do its job, because it's your best partner.
Yeah.
And I used the product, and after a week she came back, and it really was awesome. So of course I was going to buy it, which excited me, because when it was an ant, I was probably going to buy it anyway. So at least I was buying something I wanted. And I said, you know, how much is it? She said, $179. I'm like, how much do you make? And she said, well, you know, I make 59, but I can make all the way up to 120. And I'm doing the math in my head going, and you think this is your calling? You're going to be a millionaire? And she said, no, it's, you know, people buy products and people get people. And I really didn't understand enough about network marketing back then to understand it was one of those pyramid things, but the way she talked about it, that's how it sounded. And she put me on three-way. She wasn't making any sense. And he said to me, have you seen the video? I said, no. Okay, I'll talk to you if you've seen the video. And so I didn't know much about him.
That's a man after my own heart.
I watched the video, and it was very compelling. You know, it was talking about the bottled water industry and how it, and I always say this because it's just, you know, in retrospect, it's so funny. How, even though it's only a small shelf on the grocery store today, one day it's going to fill a whole aisle, like a right. And of course it has.
Yeah.
Pennies on the dollar. I was an economics major, for whatever that means. So substitute things made sense to me. You know, if this has cost a lot of money and this is a viable alternative for less. And they got me to a meeting, which immediately, and by the way, my ears weren't that perked until he told me he lost a lot of money in real estate, got into this thing. With these things, I was making $30,000 a month, which in 1988 was you know, a lot more impressive perhaps than people would find today, but still impressive today. And he got me to go to a meeting, which immediately got rid of all the goodwill that I had built up, having taught the business space test, because the meeting 30 years ago was full of 300 people, absolutely everything you could think it would be and more. And all I could think was, you know, thank God nobody I know is here. And if they were, they would want to admit being here either, so I'm safe. And the meeting went on and on and on with circles and this and that and the other thing. And it was long, and I just couldn't wait for it to be over. And finally, mercifully, people started standing up. And I'm like, oh, God, yes. And she says, oh, no, this is the best part. And I'm like, there's more? I don't have words. But I'm excited now that there's more. Sat back down, and that was the part of the meeting where people told their stories, testimonials. And they were a lot more Wild West than they are today. So people weren't able to tell you how much money they were making. But that wasn't what impressed me as much as the people seemed really excited. And when I say they were from all walks of life, I say that charitably. Because it was just people united by a spirit and an excitement about what they did. When I felt like I was going to prison every day with what I did, and it intrigued me.
Yeah.
So I went to the payphone, dating myself, and after it was over, and I called Steve, my husband, and he said, how bad was it? And I said, honey, it was even worse than we thought it would be, except for one thing. And he said, what? I said, these people, they are dumber than us, they are uglier than us, they are making more money than us, and they sure seem happier than we do. He goes, you seriously want to do this? And I'm like, I think so. And he said, well, as long as you don't talk to anybody we know. Which had never heard marketing. I didn't know what I was committing to there, but
yeah.
The rest is kind of history. What I like to tell people, though, is my first 2 years in network marketing, I made $0. I don't mean I didn't create revenue. That was a positive cash flow. But I was investing in learning the business because this was a serious part-time thing for me with something when I was making my income from something that I did well but did not like. And but at the end of 2 years, I had built, it was mailbox money, I call it. That's ever so residual that you don't have to work it. But definitely the results of all that work started coming to the mailbox to 6 figures a year. And I was thought that was the best thing I had ever seen. People today don't appreciate that a college education, which is your full-time job and costs a bunch of money, that when you get done after 4 years back then, you know, if you can get $30,000 a year and work 80 hours a week, so you can get a 5% increase next year in a city that they told you to go to, you were doing good. And here I was making 6 figures that was coming in the mail and still hadn't given up what I've done. So to me, that was the best proposition that I thought was available. And anybody who doesn't think that in 2 years you can build something like that without spending a lot of money and actually further getting educated doesn't really get it.
Yeah, no, I agree 100%. So powerful. And there's so many elements of that story I love. You know, it wasn't at every corner, it wasn't about the personal, incredible charisma or talent or special ability at any corner, you know, but whether the lady changing your sink, you know, the person running the meeting, the people giving the stories, but it built that belief of, hey, if these knuckleheads can do it, maybe I can too.
Yeah. And it's really, I love the fact that you said belief because it was so sequential. Obviously I was going to let my hands come over. And I think everybody should be willing to at least listen. You don't know what you're saying no to if you don't listen.
Right.
And she hooked it up and I would have bought it probably regardless because of who she was. But I liked it. So because I liked the product, I knew people would buy it. I just did. And so I was willing to look more. And I was always intrigued enough by what I was seeing that all the things that usually either put stars in your eyes or disgust in your head didn't play in because it was making sense. But that's because I did it step by step by step. Which, to bring to your topic, I think is a lot of working with people, especially working with and comparable personalities. Because, you know, everything is a process. And when you skip steps, you know, you can't shortcut success. You can create leverage. when you skip steps of the process, the leverage tends to not be dependable.
Right, right. So how, what suggestions might you have? You know, you've recruited some big leaders over the years and worked with a lot of different leaders. What suggestions would you have for someone that's like, man, I need to recruit a leader. Like what, I know a lot of people say that, like what's some wisdom on that topic?
Well, it's really kind of interesting because I can give you the three stages because I have always been able to recruit. I wouldn't like to say leaders, but I would say people that potentially have the skill set, but more importantly, the vision to see a big enough picture that if they embrace it, they could articulate it to others, which is a big part of leading, and they could create camaraderie and I don't want to say, when you say system, people have all these things in their head, but a systematic approach that people could follow. It's much like being a teacher. You know, you can't have the teacher teaching everybody in second grade the same information a different way with a different strategy. You have a 30-to-1 ratio. So if they've got a good curriculum, they can do it. So that's a big part of it. But where it really started was the fact that business people do not believe in get rich quick. They would run the other way.
Yeah.
So much of what people go out there and say is immediately going to turn somebody who's going to build a business off. Maybe not a salesperson who thinks they can sell a lot and make some money this year, but business people, it has to make sense. And somebody calling you when you're sitting on the couch and say, we're going to get rich with something you've never heard or tried of, you know, make all this money in the next 3 months is not going to inspire confidence. But yeah. I think for me, I think business success is a function of service to leaders. So in the beginning, I did recruit a lot of capable people because my list, everybody on it was capable of doing the job. You see, you can't convince anybody to do anything and you shouldn't try. Our job is to go out, marry the process, to work the result, have conversations, see where people are at, and if there's a match, and make them aware of options they might not have probably been aware of until you got there. So somebody gave me some great advice when I was in school. They said, you know, a no is a no is a no. If a bank president tells you no, a drunk sitting on a park bench with a bottle of whiskey in a paper bag tells you no, it's no. There is a significant difference between if each of those people says yes.
Yeah.
So for me, everybody that I talk to, because I don't know what they're going to do, and my job isn't to convince them to do it. My job was no matter who said yes, it was a person that I wanted to work with to say yes.
Yeah, amen.
So I think the quality of the conversations, the people that you're having the conversations with, which is not about somebody's bank account or education, but certainly about their real openness, their coachability, the way that they look at the world. You know, do they have a growth mindset?
Positive mental attitude.
Positive mental attitude. Are they a questioner? You know, so many people want you to have all the answers. And I like to look for people that are much more interested in identifying the challenge that's within all the questions that people are looking for answers for, and then asking better questions to work the problem. So I think that's it. People that want to work the problem. So that was the beginning. But I always wanted to have conversations. People are always calling me for help or my opinion or my take on things because I kind of have a unique, I'm good at deductive logic. I kind of have a unique outlook. And I took those phone calls because, hey, I always want to help. But it enabled me to, from the outside in, work through so many situations that I had yet to encounter. So when you help other people, you're actually helping yourself to gain leverage on your future. Because those situations will show up. So as the years went on, most of the leaders that I recruited called me. And the reason they called me was most leaders are looking for support for the way that they want to build their business. They're not looking to be directed to the same level, but they are looking for support. They're also looking for someone that they can bounce ideas off of. Someone that they appear that they could speak with, somebody that is dependable to be there. And mostly, like same with me, I don't really need an upline per se. And at this point, I'm frontline to my company. But No, I don't need someone to teach me how to do a three-way call, but I can't put myself through a copy machine. And even with all of the technology today, when you have somebody that aligns with you, with your values and aligns with the outcomes, and you see the same picture, you may have different strategies. And you know, this person may do TikTok, and this person may not even like Facebook. But the way that you see things is pretty similar. Your values of about people, which always have to come first, are pretty similar. And you have an alignment in work ethic. There, it just works. So I think that that's one of the reasons. But today, most of the conversations that I have with people would be at a level that if you could tell by the tone of the conversation, if they're going to be a big leader. Because a big leader today, tomorrow, 10 years from now, or they've got the potential and they never do it, is a function first and foremost of big vision.
Hmm. Of where are we going? Who do I want to be?
And what do I want? And I think because, and, you know, so often people are not specific, and this is elitism. You know, if we don't master the art of specificity, we master the art of settling. And there are a lot of very capable people that, for example, buy franchises. Because they are looking, and I think many of the people that come to network marketing, are especially for our time, are looking for that franchise model of that system. So they're high achievers, they're capable of following a system, they're personable. But they're not necessarily big visionaries because the McDonald's they bought was Ray Kroc's vision, and they're not going to change much, you know, right, running that McDonald's. So leading in an entrepreneurial space, you have to have big vision and high adaptability, because the vision will be constant and adapt as you learn, but the strategies will forever change. And as long as you and I have been doing this, you're doing basically the same thing on a much bigger scale. But how different are your strategies today than they were 10 years ago?
Yeah, I mean, there's a few tweaks here and there, but yeah, like you said,
the concepts are the same. But if you started out, if somebody started out using MySpace, chances are today their strategies change, but they're singing the same song.
Right.
So to speak.
For sure. So, I'd love to hear, like, what are some things that maybe you've learned or some takeaways from, you know, I think most people know that you have Jessie Lee in your team, and she's a rock star, obviously.
Unbelievable.
Rock, you know, just rock and roll. Like, what are some takeaways? Like, what have you observed?
Okay, here's an example. Jessie Lee is amazing.
Yeah.
Without getting into any kind of drama, she went through an experience. I had a similar experience in my career prior to coming to work with me. And she was in a highly emotional state, as she should have been. It was a very trying time. I was. But so often, people that want to lead or want to work with people, they don't understand. I learned how to master my emotions in a situation. You can't master your own. You certainly can't help other people master theirs, nor can you help people when they're in states of agitation. And more often than not, if leaders are looking for help or support or a sounding board, they're not necessarily in a high state of agitation, but they are in the forest and they are looking for someone who can see the trees. And so many people want to go jump in the forest. You know, that's when they misunderstand the relatability thing. So it's like you're going through something, and instead of being able to sit here and yes, tell you, I have empathy because I went through something similar, and this is what I learned. But jump in and start telling you my chef story so now we can be commiserate together. That's not leading. It may be very friendly, but it's very difficult. Again, it comes back to if you really know yourself, you have the ability to understand that when you're working with a leader, it might be about them specifically. It might be about the group at large, probably a little of both, but you know what, it isn't about you. It's never about you. So what I have learned about leaders is if you are not prepared and comfortable with your own place in the sun, then you are not ready to help other people get an even bigger place in the sun, you hope. The biggest challenge I see with people and leaders, or trying to work with them, or a leader shy away from, is I think the intent is good, but you have to be able to hope and pray and honestly want people to go further than you did, get brighter than you are, and get out of the way and be the first one to clap row, first one on the front row clapping for them.
Yeah.
With an intensity, because you understand that you are a part of that, yes. But the better they are, the more successful you become.
Right.
And a lot of people shoot themselves in the foot because they they don't want to let other people, they think those people, these people don't work for us. It is a privilege and an honor that they chose you. Your goal is to make sure that if they could do it again today, they would still make that choice.
Yeah, a lot of, I agree with you 100%. I think a lot of people, they seek control more than letting their people fly, or they want that credit so much so that it impacts. And a lot of that comes from, you know, if you talk to just from coaching a lot of people in this particular thing, if you have someone who was abandoned as a kid, a lot of times they'll take someone important to them and they will subconsciously push an abandonment complex on them and show up in a way to make them actually want to abandon them. And so it's interesting, this whole control thing and you know, very, very well said of you want them, like, hey, if they fly to the moon and no one even remembers my name, they're in your team. You're going to be doing pretty good.
You know, I always equate it to, and this is probably a bad analogy if people take it the wrong way, but I really feel this way. I always felt when dealing with people in general, adults, children, but different stages of evolution, because we can always be children in some moments. What would you want for your kid? You know, don't you want your children to go further than you did? Don't you want them to accomplish more, be happier, have less stress? Sometimes we want that so much that we enable. So that's a fine line too, between enabling the parent. Well, if you're going to work.
That's also on the premise that you're a good parent.
Yeah. I think we're good parents, but I don't think there's any parent that thinks they're a great parent. I think you're always thinking, what you could have done differently. But I think that another part of it is, like you said, an insecurity about credit. If you are a person who has a great idea, person who sees things that aren't there often, and is the first one to bring them to the forefront, chances are there only a few people remember, and you won't get a lot of credit. You have to know it yourself. But the other thing is, people should never undersoar the power of execution. You know, I've had a lot of success in my life. I'm a very much an idea person, but I'm a big picture person. And when it comes to the details, I am, after 30 years of beating myself up over it, almost average at execution. People, you, Steve, my husband who's an engineer, they're incredible execution people. And what happens when people get into this, they're getting credit, I'm not getting credit, especially in a relationship where you are actually, this person's writing your paycheck. These people are writing your paycheck. The company may mail it to you, but that's where it's created. They get into this thing that they forget, that they lose the marriage. Because when great people come together, if you can get out of the way and not feel like you have to take credit, you know, I live in a philosophy of 1 + 1 = 3. And that's my minimum. Anything I do, and you might want to write this down for those of you listening, because this helps everywhere. Anything I do, it's 1 + 1 = 3 on some format. So if you can make $100,000 a year and I can make $100,000 a year and we decide to partner, but we only make $200,000, then we want a friendship or camaraderie, or you want to work alone. But what was the point? Because we're going to use up more time talking to each other than if you've been alone to accomplish one. So I think like Curtis Brew, my partner, and I are like 1 + 1 = 5 because we've been doing it for so many years. Jesse Lee is like 1 + 32 = 36 because she is such a dynamo. So anything that you do, if you don't see that equation, why are you doing it?
Yeah.
It doesn't always have to be that you're going to make more money. If I'm going to cook, I can get it out fast. If I bring you somebody to my kitchen to cook with me, either we're going to have fun or the meal's coming out quicker, or I would rather do it alone. So that if you look, you can't get that 1 + 1 = 3 if you're so worried about that somebody's trying to make you zero. Nobody's trying to make you zero.
Well said. That's really well said. I've never heard it said that way. That's really cool. Really, really good stuff. Can you share a little bit about you've been involved with A&MP for a long time, and I know that we have our event, you know, coming up, and I'll be there, you'll be there, a bunch of rock stars. Can you share like what do you enjoy about the A&MP?
You know, it's funny, right? Because don't let Garrett see this video. When the A&MP got started, what I loved about it was that it was kind of a smaller event. You know, it's a nonprofit. I was at Sister on the board. So you have top leaders in the space from all over come in to speak or lend their talents, because it's a nonprofit whose goal is to further the education of all that want to operate in network marketing and elevate the profession so that people outside of it can have the understanding perhaps that we have in it and see how many ways it is. But you go to this event, and it was just the best people, people with the giving hearts, and by the way, are always the biggest leaders over time. That's heart comes to mind. And you could spend time with them. And then a lot of people would come in, because it was a small attendance, they could get a lot of attention. It was very, like an intimate gathering. But of course, as events go, your objective is to grow the event. So Ray, you know, came on board first to help, and then I don't know what kind of a day we were having, then we got lucky enough that he got on the board with us. It started to really grow. And I still love it. But I didn't enjoy the in-person as much, although I thought we accomplished so much. This year's like the best of both worlds, because it's a hybrid event. So we can only have, I don't know, maybe a maximum of like 600 people maybe in person. I know they're moving the room around to try to get it more, because we already sold 400 tickets. And then rest is going to be hybrid, but in a very unique way, even if you're home doing it virtually, because it's going to be very interactive, but also in 3-hour blocks, so the people at home don't feel like they can't have breaks between sitting there, and the people that are in person are going to have all of this time to do activities because they showed up in person. So if you can get there June 2nd through the 4th, there are going to be a lot of amazing people you can hang with, take pictures with. The tickets are ridiculous because it is a nonprofit that includes a VIP party, an awards banquet, all the meals, all the stuff. And it's like $350. I think maybe $347.
Yeah, definitely check out the site. Yeah. And one thing is, you know, every speaker there, there's no speaker there that gets paid. Like every speaker
zero
is their time and buying their own ticket. So like, you know, we're one of the sponsors. And so I have some of our super cool, you know, team leaders coming, and that'll be fun. It's really cool. So if someone is in network marketing, has a humongous ego, they're just not going to go speak, because they could go get paid to speak somewhere, or they could go, you know, speak over.
You know, I don't ever want to put a name on anything, but because it's for service to the industry, the list of people that are willing to speak, if they can show up, is so long, you don't typically find a lot of egos there, because we run out of stage time before we run out of people that are willing to do it.
That's right. That's right. That's totally right. Well, cool. Well, I'm looking forward, because I can't even remember last time I saw you in person.
I am so excited, actually.
Yeah, I'm excited to see you. I'm excited. This was such great content. So many people need to hear this, because, you know, I've seen a lot over the years where someone got their wish, got a big leader in, and then blew it. You know, when, you know, started feeling insecure, started, you know, pushing, you know, past issues out there and wanting the credit. And,
you know, I want to say one thing that, you know, I've always said, when you bring somebody to the business, it stops being about you. It's about them. And the same thing applies, leader or otherwise. So, you know, in the selfie generation, always remember where to point your camera, because pictures of you are good for your ego. Pictures of your happy growing team are good for your bank account and your future.
Yeah.
So that's where I put my attention. And the last thing I'll leave you with is, leaders are attracted to leaders. Go become the leader you wish to recruit. And it's easy to do through modeling, because there's nothing a leader does that really is an attribute or a character trait or a discipline. I've never met somebody that says, you know, because I got that degree in physics, I'm really good at network marketing, or gee, my corporate experience in international banking really has come in handy. So everything they're doing is something that you can do, but here's the difference. Write this down. If you are not ready to fail, you're not ready to learn. And leaders are always ready to fail, so they're always learning. And that's really it.
That's right. Well, well said. Well, Lisa Grossman, everyone, always, always amazing, always insightful. I can't wait to see you. It's only less than a month. It's going to be amazing. And so please give her some love. You're already getting some love. Such good wisdom. You really, more people need to understand this wisdom that was dropped so that they don't blow it, so they don't screw it up. And so I appreciate you, Lisa. I will see you very soon. I'm really looking forward to it.
I love you. See you soon.
Oh, I love you. Lisa Grossman, everybody.
Thank you for listening to Home Business Profits with Ray Higdon. And be sure to head over to rayhigdon.com/profits to download your free audio where Ray shares his 29 sources of network marketing leads. Tune in next time for more tips and strategies on how to become a top earner in your company.